Now that was a nice intro. That was cool.
Thank you. Hey guys, welcome back to the Prehistoric Life Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Crawford, and today we have another interview with Jimmy from the Dinosaur Podcast. There's his Instagram. He's got some looks like a link page on it. If you want to go check out his podcast, I'm sure he has it linked in there. So would you like to introduce yourself a little bit more?
Of course. Thank you so much. Hi, Eric. My name is Jimmy, and I am the founder of Dinosaurs Will Always Be Awesome. It started off as a podcast like what you're doing here now, and it's kind of evolved into something new. So now it is a mobile dinosaur museum where I bring real and replica fossils out to libraries, schools, and communities that don't have access to the same incredible experiences that we have going in and being able to see some really cool museums. And so it's something I really enjoy doing, and I'm hoping that people enjoy it too. So thank you so much for having me.
And there's this website for everybody who wants to go check it out. Just go to dwaba.org.
Mm-hmm. DWABA for short, because Dinosaurs Will Always Be Awesome is a great title, but it's really difficult to type in or to write on like IRS documents to become a 501c3, which we are. But yeah, that's DWABA for short.
I'll definitely link it in the subsection or bio.
Appreciate it.
Whatever you want to call it. But I mean, so the most generic question that I pretty much start off every interview with is, what is your favorite dinosaur?
Oh, Eric, I do the same thing, buddy. That's the best question to start with, isn't it? Yeah. So my
obvious one.
You know, in this line of work, you can't have just one answer, right? Because depending on who you talk to, you're talking to little kids or you're talking to grown adults, everybody has different needs for things. So I always want to make sure that people know I have a favorite ceratopsian, which is my good buddy right here, Cosmoceratops, hanging up here on the wall. I've always loved the way Cosmoceratops look, because with all these extra horns, like anywhere you could stick a horn, we're going to put a horn on there. And it's just, I just love it so much. Second, I love Aulorotitan. Aulorotitan, that big hadrosaur with the huge hatchet head in the back. Oh my gosh, the first time I saw one of those, it was at Jurassic Quest, and I was just blown away. Like, what is this hadrosaur? I've never seen this thing before. And I was just so mesmerized by it. But all in all, my ride or very, very dead favorite dinosaur of all time is Tyrannosaurus Rex, specifically Stan the T-Rex, because he's very important in my own paleo journey, and just one of the coolest best.
I mean, you can't go wrong with T-Rex. It's just that one dinosaur that I feel like everybody knows, and for everybody who doesn't know what a Aulorotitan looks like, there you go. That's a rough one. Rough. I don't know how accurate those are, because those are not actually shown in the movies.
Well, so Aulorotitan is not too far back discovery. It's a fairly recent development. And so, okay, if you click over there on the Wikipedia page, I'm doing the same thing because I'm pointing at a screen that's over here, but on the view, it's over here. So if you point over here, the exits are here and here and here, and we'll illuminate when the time comes. So if you look, the skull of Aulorotitan has that extension on the back, and parts of it, so if you click on the next picture there with the skeletal, yeah, and then click into it, you can actually see from what we've been able to reconstruct based on other. Yeah, there you go.
Right there.
And so we know that it has this kind of, this really cool structure in the back of its head. And so it's a fairly recent discovery. The most beautiful example of it is actually in Prehistoric Planet on Apple TV. They weren't even named. They didn't even give him the name of them. But he said these Titanic swans, which is what it actually means. The Aloro swan titan. Man, the swan titans, the strongest and most powerful of the hadrosaurs.
I just went back and I've just been rewatching Prehistoric Planet. Like this morning, I just like woke up and was like, I can't fall back asleep. I'm going to just watch Prehistoric Planet.
Absolutely. I have it on repeat. It's still playing. I haven't turned it off since it first came out. We're on second season two. It's just continually repeat.
Rewatching it. Have you seen Life on Our Planet?
I've seen parts of it. You know what? I'm pretty bad. I haven't seen the entire thing yet.
Morgan Freeman he's a great narrator. I love his voice.
Absolutely, he is.
But I mean,
so Eric, back at you. What's your favorite dinosaur?
So, like you said, you can't just have one. But like you said, my ride or die is definitely Allosaurus.
Hey, all right.
Just because it was the first, I don't want to say traditional dinosaur, because I mean, I knew about T-Rex and Triceratops all before that, but it was like the first other dinosaur I was introduced to. And it was through the BBC documentary Ballad of Big Al.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was like Jurassic Park, then that, and then I was just like, dinosaurs.
I love that you said it was your first, it was your favorite other lizard, because it's your favorite different dinosaur, because its name literally means the different dinosaur.
Yeah, I mean, and I got like Suchiomimus right here. I love Suchiomimus. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, there's so many abstract dinosaurs, it's hard to just pick one. And like, I remember early on, whenever I start first getting into dinosaurs, I mean, I was just like, Allosaurus, that's it. And I would just like,
yeah,
say that was it. And then I was like, well, there's this one, and there's also this one. Like, one of the ones that I keep going back to, and I've actually, it's really grown on to me, is Epidepteryx. And it's just such a tiny little random, honestly kind of horrifying dinosaur. I'm trying to find it. I need a
table. Look at my earbuds.
But I mean, it's just something.
The Epidepteryx is a really cool creature, though, too, isn't it? Because it's got a lot of feathers on it, and it's another small one. So it's another example of how dinosaurs didn't have to be huge. They could still be, yeah.
It's a rough sketch. They're really long arms. They're also nocturnal, if I'm not mistaken, which is, if they
how
were.
How do we know that?
Because it's with the, what's it called? The weird ring thing that they found in the skull for the behind the eye.
Okay.
I think so, but I could be mistaken. I mean, I could be thinking of any of other of the 700 some odd species.
Yeah, but what would you need to know if an animal is nocturnal?
Well, I guess you would need to know, I mean, obviously the skull based on like the eye, because I mean, let's say the Spinosaurus skull, the eye hole, probably not the best example because it's tiny, is rather small.
Yeah.
So probably had hunted in the day, maybe from a creek or shallow water. But something like, do I have my Velociraptor skull somewhere?
I do.
Velociraptor skull. Yours is a lot more accurate than mine.
Yours looks more like a Deinonychus skull.
I mean, the eye hole is a lot bigger.
Yeah, what you have there is modeled after an early reconstruction of the Deinonychus. That's more like a JP Raptor skull.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, no offense to Velociraptors, I still think Velociraptors are really cool, but the name has definitely been tainted by Jurassic Park.
What do you mean?
Just a wee bit.
Why?
I mean, like the,
what do you mean tainted?
Jurassic Park is still really cool, and I know it's based on Deinonychus and Utah Raptor, but everybody thinks that that's the Velociraptor now, and it's just kind of like, but it's also fun to talk about that. It's also fun to like tell someone's perspective about that.
You know the story behind that? You know why they changed it at the end?
What do you mean?
You know, okay, do you know why they went with Velociraptor?
Because
this goes way back. This goes way back. Okay. So when Michael Crichton was actually writing Jurassic Park, he was working very closely with Dr. John Ostrom, who was the person who discovered Deinonychus along with Robert Bakker back in the 60s. And so Michael Crichton worked with Ostrom on all of the research that he has. I want to know how fast they are, how high they can jump. Did they live gregariously? Did they live in packs? How do they feel about industrial kitchens? All those kind of questions. And Ostrom was there to answer all that. And then as he's writing the story, he's like, oh, Deinonychus is going to be the main villain of this thing. We're going to make this incredibly intelligent creature. But then right before they went to publish, the editor's like, hey, we think the word Velociraptor is scarier, and it's a separate kind of thing, and kids can't really pronounce Deinonychus, so we're going to change it. And so with that, it switched it to Velociraptor because it was just scarier sounding. And Crichton was always very heavily into the science thing, so he wouldn't want to change it for the sake of changing it. But so then that carried through. In fact, even the early designs for the raptors in Jurassic Park had the storyboard said Deinonychus at the bottom of them. So it was a Deinonychus up until it wasn't. And now 30 years later, we're still dealing with this.
But I mean, yeah, so I mean, it wasn't necessarily Velociraptor anymore, but it's also, I mean, Deinonychus was one of those first dinosaurs that really challenged the feather theory for dinosaurs, wasn't it?
Yes, very much so. Because it was one of the ones that, not so much the feathers, but definitely that dinosaurs could be agile. Because it was the first one that had long, hollow bones, and the length of its femur compared to the length of its thigh bones was more on par with fast predators like jaguars and cheetahs and things like that. It's like, wow, this is not a slow lumbering creature. This thing had some horses under the hood. So it probably was a pretty agile and dynamic creature. And plus these claws are meant for tearing stuff up. So change some of our perspective on how the dinosaurs were.
And I mean, I personally am more of a Deinonychus fan. I'm not even going to lie. I find more, I don't want to say fun because I find all of the studying all of them fun, but I look at that Deinonychus and Velociraptor, and I just lean towards Deinonychus, and that's just me personally. I mean, I get everybody else's.
I'm a little partial as well. And my friend Poe here is a Deinonychus, and she's pretty phenomenal. And you can see those terrible claws right there doing their best.
I actually got one right here from Fossil Crates.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And you can like compare the size of Velociraptor and Deinonychus. I mean, Velociraptor was a lot smaller.
Lost me for a second. Wow, come on back. There we are.
I mean, there's a guy on YouTube that I saw, and he did scientifically accurate dinosaurs in Jurassic Park, and he edited them in.
Yeah.
And he had the Velociraptor one, and it was just like a tiny little bird, and it's the scene where it's looking through the window into the kitchen, and it's just jumping up.
Oh, cute.
It's not tall enough to just look in. It's like, yeah, I mean, that's accurate.
That's fun. I want to see that.
I'll see if I can find it.
I'll check it out later for sure. Send it to me later on, but absolutely. Yeah, I definitely want to check that out.
But I mean, the amount of like stuff that has changed. And I mean, I know people love to harp on Jurassic Park for being scientifically inaccurate. And granted, I give them the excuse that they use modern reptiles and amphibians to fill in the DNAs that would probably change how something looked. Just an idea. So, I mean, kind of answered it in their own movie. But, I mean, but for the time, it was accurate. I mean, we didn't know T-Rex was feathered. We didn't know it had lips. I mean.
So, yeah, the in-universe theory about why it looked like this, yeah, because you're combining a bunch of DNA. And you mix a few pieces of frilled lizard in there with some unknown DNA from a dinosaur that also lived in Arizona, New Mexico. And you're going to make Dilophosaurus look like this. I get it. That's fine. But I don't like to say that Jurassic Park was inaccurate, because the reason that people can say those kind of things now is because that movie inspired the entire next generation of paleontology. So everybody who's made a discovery in the last 30 years was sitting in that movie theater going, wow, this is awesome. I wonder if I could contribute to this in some way. Did they really look like this? Could T-Rex really chase down a Jeep? Was a Triceratops really going to be poisoned with berries and things like that? And then take a look. Prehistoric planet, one of the sequences about Triceratops, what are they doing? They're eating cycads because that's their main food source. Sago palms and things like that are incredibly toxic plants today. If you have sago palms and you have dogs, you got to get rid of one because they can be very toxic. So we know that these dinosaurs experienced those kind of toxic things. Jurassic Park showed us one not doing so well with it. Prehistoric planet showed us maybe they could go and find really chalk laden rocks to, you know, help get themselves some paleo tums. So yeah, Jurassic Park paved the way for generations of scientists to now look more closely at these bones and at these animals and paint a larger picture for us.
I mean, and saying inaccuracy in movies is just kind of, watch the movie, have fun. Yeah. That's the point of a movie. I mean, as long as it's not like a documentary. I mean, they're not claiming it to be a documentary. So, I mean, there's no reason to be like, yeah, your movie's not accurate. It's like, it's a movie. Have fun.
Yeah, exactly.
I did something where I just like sat down and watched Jurassic Park 2. And I was like, I'm not going to sit here and like be like, that T-Rex doesn't look right. I was just like, this thing is cool. I love this T-Rex. I mean, granted, they did give it a more monstrous look, but that was because it was supposed to be a more horror movie kind of thing. Or more.
Yeah, they're going for some sequelizers there, for sure. Yeah, they had to make things a little bit more this time around than they did the last time, but sure.
I mean, but like, hey, I mean, like you said, I mean, it brought paleontology back into the spotlight because it had kind of been out for a little bit, but I mean, and it brought people back into it. I mean, it's still inspiring people to this day. I mean, I'm an example right here. I mean, it inspires me to do this. It inspires me to want to go out and dig things up.
Absolutely.
I mean, granted.
Have you had a chance to go digging anything up yet, Eric?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I'm really hoping to one day.
Yeah, you will.
But I've definitely been like shark hunt, not shark hunt, shark tooth searching on the beach. Oh, that's probably
a little bit of a megatooth there.
Yeah, it's a it's not a megalodon, but it's an ancestor to it.
Ooh. Oh, very cool.
Gotta figure out how to. I'm just gonna take it out of the case because it's not gonna break. So I mean, I found this. I found like a
5 million years plus a Sunday. There you go.
And I'm hoping to go back out there and search for more things. I mean,
yeah,
even
absolutely.
If I can't go out there right now, for all you watching, I will be out there one day. That is a promise. But I mean, even if I can't go out there right now, I can still do stuff where I'm at and like find stuff on the beach. Like we get like whale bones, mosasaur teeth, shark teeth, things like that. We don't get the, because I live in South Carolina, so we don't get a lot of big dinosaurs like that.
No, you don't have dinos, but you do have some really cool, because I'm down here in Florida, and we don't have any dinosaurs unless you count seagulls or flamingos. But we have megalodon, we have mammoths and mastodons. You had some pretty cool megafauna things as well.
So,
and you're a big fan of the Morrison Formation because you like Allosaurus so much. So yeah, I mean, if you, in the future, when you get a chance, I think you might really enjoy going out and digging in places like the Morrison Museum in Morrison, Colorado. They have digs that they go on, the Wyoming Dinosaur Center in Thermopolis. They have daily digs. You can actually go out and see an allosaur feeding site. And you can see, yeah, you would have a blast at that place, man. You got to check that out.
So, I mean, I haven't been out on a dig, but I have been to Utah. So I did get lucky with that. And Colorado. And if you go to Utah and you're going to go see dinosaurs, what better place than Dinosaur National Park?
It's on my list. I haven't been out there yet myself, but I definitely got to get out there for sure.
I got – my dog's freaking out. I got a large – or I say large. It's juvenile Allosaurus, like, hand claw, which is –
You got that there?
Yeah, I got it.
Do they know you have it?
I'm sure TSA had a field day when I was flying back.
Always. But holy cow.
It's only like a what do you call it? Like a mold, but I mean, that's still like really cool. And it was my first like major
that is spectacular
fossil thing, I guess. I mean, and me and my brother joked that every paleontologist or dinosaur person has like a centerpiece that just like, that's their centerpiece. Mm-hmm. That's mine. For right now, that is mine.
That's great one. That's not a bad centerpiece at all. That's a really good way to get started for sure.
I mean, and considering that was like one of my first things, because I hadn't had like a few things and like little like claws and stuff that people had gotten me. I mean, but that one was like, that's a level up. I was like leveling up. I'm like, I got to start getting a little bit more serious about this. I mean,
so tell me more about how you acquired this particular piece. How did you get your centerpiece showstopper here? Oh, all right. Well, it's a short story.
not too spectacular, but I was at Utah. I mean, we went to the Dinosaur National Park. They had a gift shop.
Yeah.
And I had a hard time between – it was Ceratosaurus, I think, lower – like part of the lower jaw. kind of like this Dromaeosaurus lower jaw piece, but it was Ceratosaurus, so it was a little bit bigger. That, I want to say something with Camarasaurus. I don't really remember that one, but I feel like there was, or that, and I was like, Ceratosaurus lower jaw is pretty cool. But yeah. I feel, in my opinion, that was cooler.
No, that's your that's your boy right there. That's the one you need.
And I didn't get these from Dinosaur National Park, or did I? Maybe I did. Actually, I think I did. I got, it's an Allosaurus tooth and a Camarasaurus tooth mold. So okay. I think I got those from Dinosaur National Park too. But I mean, hey, I mean, I was just like, I was also in the moment where I was like, this is so cool. And I bought it and I was like, how am I going to get this home?
No, you figure that out later. I've been on so many digs where I've had to either just like, well, thank you very much. You've served your purpose, shorts and underwear, and then toss it out. Or like had to mail my clothes home. And then I'm like, okay, I need room in the carry-on. Lately, I've gotten to the point where I'll pack like a collapsible duffel bag in my regular bags. So that way it's like, I can bring an entire extra bag of fun stuff home with me. So it's like, you gotta plan ahead. But you gotta live and learn to get to that point.
I just put it in my, what's the check bag? Because they don't.
There you go.
There. I mean, if I had that on my carry-on, they're gonna be like, what is this? Although I'm sure if it's coming from Utah, they're probably used to people bringing home weird fossils and things all the time.
The first time I came home from Wyoming, I found a block of something that had a little fish jaw in it. And, you know, it was a big piece, but there's a part of the jaw right here. And I couldn't see much, but I know that where the jaw was, there was a little elevation piece. There was like a little lump or something else here. And so I was coming through the regional airport out there in Wyoming, and they had to run all my bags through the x-ray. And like, what's going on here? And say, oh, can you, to be fair, can you run this piece by itself? I had to take all the rocks and stuff out of my bag and run it through. And they ran the fish jaw piece through by itself. And they said, well, it's not making out anything clear, but it looks like there's definitely something right above here. So I think TSA helped me find the rest of the fish's skull. And it's like, I know it's in there. You can't see it, but we all know it's there.
Yeah, I mean, I went to Alaska recently. Southern part of Alaska.
Really?
Wish I went to Prince Creek Formation, because that's far north, and that's where you get Nanukasaurus and Pachyrhinosaurus and some of those Hadrosaurs. But I don't know how I can do this. That's the wrong – that way. You can kind of see it up there. It's like a fossil map of Alaska. I'll send you a clearer picture, post something about it later. Try not to rip my old desk up. But, I mean – this past winter, it's still winter, but like in like December, I was doing some other like far north and southern dinosaurs for like cold time episodes because it was cold. I mean,
sure.
Yeah, you know, I was like, how am I going to do this? And I just showed, I was like, just took my phone, just put it up close to where it was and kind of just use a flashlight and kind of circle around it and was like, that's where it lived.
I mean, nice.
And I mean, there's like a lot of crazy dinosaurs everywhere. I mean, I love it. And I would have killed to bring home a Nanukasaurus skull.
Well, you know what? You got to set goals.
Yeah, but I was also like,
but you've had a chance to go to Alaska. I've never been to Alaska. That's a really cool experience in itself.
Yeah, there's like a lot of stuff there. I mean, I was surprised because like going into that, I was like, there's not going to be anything up here that's like dinosaur related. And I was doing some research. There's a lady with her own private collection in, I want to say Anchorage, or right outside of Anchorage.
Yeah.
Or even Seaward. I don't remember. But she had like, it was like a Ceratopsian skull, like right as you enter. And it was just her own private collection. There was like a lot of, there's some interesting stuff there, and there was some interesting stuff there. Like she had like a weird section that was kind of just like random African things that I think somebody sold her.
Okay.
Which was rather interesting. So she had like a lion, which was, it was still cool, but it was like, this is interesting. I don't think we get those in Alaska anymore. But
yeah, it's like an eclectic collection of things.
I think it was her collection, because there was some other stuff there. Like, I think she had some Spinosaurus, Giganotosaurus. She had some Allosaurus stuff there. And I was like, yeah, those, I don't think those were in Alaska. But I think she went out places, got them, or she went and found them. And
that's really cool, though.
But I mean, I don't know if she lives there or if she moves somewhere else during the winter.
Either way, you know, it's nice. I mean, the things that I have here are not local things, you know, so it's like you've got casts and fossils and, you know, artifacts from your adventures and your journeys around, like, you know, like, again, Florida, where am I going to find an Apatosaurus femur in Florida? You're not going to have one of those floating around anywhere, you know, so you gotta, you find the pieces where you can, and you flesh out the collection for the betterment of all people.
But like, Fossil Crates really helps me out with that, man. I mean,
yeah,
they got a lot of cool stuff like that. So I love their scaled skulls, and they're coming out with some more in February, which I have to check out. So, I mean, like a Apatosaurus, I got this one and I'm like, this is really cool. And then I was debating whether I should get this or Triceratops, because my plan is to, like, as I get older and as I travel out to these places and I meet people like you and the other people I've interviewed, I'm going to have to sign it. I mean,
oh, okay, interesting.
I've got some like silver Sharpies and I have tested it. I don't remember where.
That's a fun idea.
But I mean, it's just like a little, it's a side mission. I mean,
yeah. And that's a unique piece that you'll have and no one else will have with it.
Yeah.
So that's a really clever thing to do. Yeah.
I gotta like jam bubble wrap in every little hole because I'm afraid it's gonna break. I mean,
oh, no.
Because, I mean, it's not just my dream to dig up dinosaurs. I mean,
yeah.
More or less. I mean, but.
So what inspired you to do this, Eric? What inspired you to start the podcast here and everything you're doing now?
So actually, it wasn't even my idea. Like, I was just like dropping everything, trying to pick stuff up. So I had started this journal. I want to say back in, did I date it by any chance, by any stretch of the imagination? No. Okay. I want to say 2017, but I feel like that was too early.
Okay.
But, and I had just been writing about it, and I've just been studying dinosaurs, and I was like, because I was a lot younger then, so I was just kind of like, man, I'd love to tell us stuff to people. And I'm like, sure. I'd be like telling my friends and my family. And my dad, he does like, he's like an editor. He does like editing things and he does like software engineering. And okay. He has his own podcast, not related to dinosaurs at all. But I mean.
No, but it's okay. You got to find your niche. Yeah.
Yeah. And he set me up. He was like, I got an account. Like I use StreamYard now. And he's like, I got an account on here. Feel free to use it. Post stuff up. I originally started on QuickTime because that's how he taught me, and that was just audio. So
yeah,
if you scroll far enough down on Spotify, it's like just audio stuff. But I mean, I started my podcast in November 26th, 2019, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And early on, I wasn't consistent with it, but I've been trying to get more consistent with it. And I mean,
it's hard to balance things sometimes.
Now I'm just like, I just do it. It's just part of my daytime cycle. I mean,
yeah, man.
I've gotten so far ahead with stuff. I mean, I'm like 4 or 5 episodes ahead. This will be, hang on, I gotta move the 1, 2, 3, 4. This will be number 5. That, like, I'm just like ahead. So, I mean, and I don't, that's just one of those things because it's like, I mean, it helps me build connections. It helps me get where I need to be because,
like, you're telling stories, you're connecting people to the information that they wouldn't have otherwise had. Well, that's the main thing you're doing this too. Like, yeah.
Like, I have like connections with like Dr. Brian Curtis. I'm trying to talk to the Why Dinosaurs people. I mean, and like, if I go out to these places, I'm like, I kind of don't have to be like, I don't know where I'm at. I don't know where I'm doing. I could just be like, yo, this guy, I know your museum's here and I'm in the area. You mind if I step in and see what you do or whatever? I mean,
yeah.
I hope that I keep these connections with these people and that they're like, yeah, come on in. Let me, interview. Let me talk face to face. Let me show you around my museum. Let me show you around the dig site. Let me take you on a dig site. I mean, and I've invited a person if she ever comes to South Carolina. I mean, we don't have dinosaurs, but I was like, I'll walk on the beach with you and we could look for shark teeth.
Yeah.
What totally. We got. I mean, I learned stuff from people. I've been invited to things like Clayton, the dinosaur cowboy. He's got a thing in North Carolina on April 27th. Wow. I'm surprised I remember that date, but he uncovered.
You must be looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am. I mean, it's just like something in the back of my brain. I mean, he uncovered the dueling dinos and he's like, we're unveiling it in Rawling, North Carolina. And he's like, you want to come? I was like, yes, let me come. That's awesome, please.
Man. Oh, fantastic.
So I'm planning on doing a couple episodes on that, probably one interviewing him about it, one just like sitting down talking about it. He'll probably be the first person I have signed this, which would be really cool. And that's going to be something like really like honoring to me. I mean, it's always just like so fun to like just reach out and talk to these people because,
yeah,
I mean, I get for some reason, for some strange reason, some people are not completely fascinated about dinosaurs. I don't know how, but they are. I mean, and for the people that are, sometimes it is hard to find content. So, I mean, I get it. T-Rex, Triceratops, Velociraptor. I hate to say it, but even Allosaurus. I mean, they've been, I don't want to say beaten to the ground a little bit, but there is so much.
We're going to beat them out of the ground first.
Yeah, there's so much content out there about them. But there's nothing for random dinosaurs like, well, those are actually like Cynoceropteryx, or like I said earlier, Epidepteryx, and yeah, all these other random niche dinosaurs. And like,
there's so what do you want people to know about these dinosaurs? Let's pivot the story then. Let's make the rest of this conversation about one of those lesser known dinosaurs. What do you want to talk about? What do you want to learn?
So, I mean, let's go with Cynoceropteryx. Let's go with that one.
Cynoceropteryx. Yeah. What do you know about it?
Well, I mean, I have to update this because this is actually this is one of the older pages I did. So I don't have some of the newer knowledge that I've put on there. But I mean, I try to do like a rough sketch. Now that I actually have video up, I can pull things up like get things ready for the episode and
yeah,
pull up like pictures and things like that, which is
you got really your field helpful. Guide.
Yeah, I mean, I have my own field guide and
what's the name of the field guide right above my head here?
So I have like the how long it is, which is about 3.5 feet long, about 1.2 pounds, 11.5-ish in inches tall. It mm-hmm. eats insects, dead animals, and equally small prey. So it's a carnivorous dinosaur. And if I'm not mistaken, Benton. Book somewhere. I have to dig it out. Michael Benton. This is the dinosaur that he discovered was a ginger, if I'm not mistaken. So I mean,
click on the picture of the fossil there.
Ooh, that's the wrong one. Hang on, it's got to load.
Yep. And then click into that picture as well.
All right. I hate it when the internet does this. Yeah. It opens in a new window and it's like, eh.
Yeah. Give me 1 second while you're doing that.
But I mean, it looks like a blur for me. Jesus. it was founded in China, so I mean, I'm going to guess he has the fossil.
The pictures and the information of that one right now, I'm going to get another resource that we have at our disposal.
I'm pulling up another one of my resources too. Got to scroll for a little bit, though. Find it. S-I, so it's S-I-N-O. It's pretty far down there. S-I-N. And for all of you watching this, you get to see the background on how I have to find these dinosaurs. Here, hopefully this one works. S-I-N-O-S-S-S-S-S.
Here we go. All right. So this is out of Dinosaur World. It is a huge compendium. It's a tome written by Evan Johnson Ransom with art by Julius Stoney. And in here, it's got every dinosaur, like every single one of them.
Every single one of them.
Every single one of them. Name a dinosaur, it's in this book, unless we found it in like the last 4 days. But yeah, so here's Sinoceropteryx right here. And you can see those vivid colors. Its name means the Chinese lizard wing from the early Cretaceous of Asia, carnivorous. And we've analyzed the feathery integument of Sinoceropteryx, showing it as a compsognathid with light brownish coloring and random and a raccoon or red panda banded tail. So that's really cool to see. And like when you had that picture of the fossil up, you could actually see it.
Yeah. But a resource, since I don't have that book, which I will get one very soon.
It's a newer edition. That's why like all the current dinosaurs are in here.
Prehistoric Wildlife, which is basically like that book, except for it's not just dinosaurs. There's some mammals, some pterosaurs, some it's all that just all in one place. So you get like a little size comparison to a human, which is very useful. I will say that now, knowing like, because I love Prehistoric Planet and I love life on our planet and all that. But whenever you, which episode is it in Prehistoric Planet with the Majingasaurus hunting like the little thing? You're like, either Majingasaurus is really tiny or that thing is really huge. And Majingasaurus isn't tiny, so that thing is huge. But not having like an actual focus of like recognition that you can like go like, yeah, that's like a size scale. Comparison that I can, yeah, scale.
Yeah.
But I mean, having this is really useful. Some of them don't have it because we don't know what it, like all of them, all of the whole dinosaur.
Yeah, think about all the ones that we know from like a knuckle and things like that. Like we get two teeth and we get a toe bone. So like this is how we're going to call it the slaughter raptor, thing like that. But yeah, so you can see, can you go back to the picture that we had where we actually looked at the fossil?
Sure. There we go. Let's zoom in here. You can, or try to zoom in. Yeah, there we go.
Don't zoom. You can click onto it because it's the picture that they have here is super high resolution, so you can see things really clearly.
Yeah, you can kind of see the
right there. You can see right as you go along the tail there.
You can kind of see the outline of like the feathers and how like the bone is kind of. It looks like copper a little bit, like the bone.
A little bit. What now? If it's but okay, when copper is underground for a really long time, it turns a different color. But you know what color copper turns when it's been exposed to the environment?
Isn't it green? Like a greenish?
It turns
color?
Green, right? But what element do you know that turns this reddish brown color when exposed?
Iron.
Yeah, that's right. That's like when I have my. This is a piece of a diplodocid bone that I dug out from Wyoming, and I have you can see the thick layers of the actual leg bone around the outside here, but then all this orange stuff on the inside. And I let people take a look at this and think, well, why is this so vividly orange here when like the dirt around it was like gray and brown? Because what you're looking at here is the remains of the iron from the dinosaur's blood and bone marrow. So we got fossilized dinosaur blood from a huge long neck right here. So it's pretty cool to see.
That's really cool. I don't have anything like that, but hang on.
But that's why when we look at the picture of Sinoceropteryx and you can see those distinctive bands, those distinctive colors that we see there, we often people say, oh, we don't know what color dinosaurs really were. It was like, there's a long and growing list of dinosaurs that we do know what color they were. We do know how big they were and whether they had feathers. We do know that they had lips. We know that the eggshells of Deinonychus are this color as well.
Whoa.
Because we found eggshells And this is the same size, this is the right shape, this is the right texture, and it's the right color of a Deinonychus egg, because we've found eggshells and analyzed bits of the shell and extracted some of those filaments, those pigment molecules, looked at them under an electron microscope, and it's kind of looking at a dried paint swatch, and like, you're going to take this down to the hardware store, I need a gallon of this. And so we can find out the actual color of these things, because our technology is improving. We're working harder on understanding the subtle nuances of these animals and these fossils. And that is why our understanding of this ancient world is getting better and better, because of taking our time and wanting to ask those questions. So, what do you got there? You got a bunch of lumpy stuff.
These are not dinosaur at all, but these are iron concretions.
Hey, okay.
So it's like a chunk of iron from underground, and as it like rains, it basically forms together, gets covered in like dirt and stuff. But if
yeah,
you kind of see it there. Look, is it this one, or you kind of see it in both of them? You have that red chunk. Yeah,
there it is. Right there,
you see all the red, and it basically
spectacular.
Takes it and rises to the top, and then you just find them on the ground. And that just basically means that somewhere under the ground in that general area is a giant deposit of iron. And as those little chunks of it break off and rise, I mean,
of course, they're indicating to you, if you're going to be doing any kind of mining or looking for any of those materials, that's where you find.
You'd find.
That's why a lot of the really great jobs in paleontology, the ones that pay really well, are often more in the geosciences. Because a lot of times people who are looking for resources around the world are, you know, looking for people who understand how to speak to and understand the rock around them. So it's like, okay, can you tell me where I could find some iron, where I could find some platinum, where I could find some oil? And you do all that, and I'll tell you, you know, I'll fund the rest of your dig for a further 3 years.
Yeah, it's like, tell me where I can find this, and I'll give you some money for a dig. It's like,
that's the idea. That's the idea.
You got it. But I mean, I personally did not find this, but now I'm blanking on his name. Seth from Fossil Shack.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard of him, but he's in Salem, Utah, or maybe Arizona. There's a something's everywhere, but this is one of the many things that he sent me. And by the time I upload this episode, hopefully that episode is uploaded, so this isn't breaking the surprise. So he was like, I was just talking to him one day. And he was like, how about I send you some stuff? Because I was talking about how I was personally building my collection. He was like, I'm going to send you some stuff. And I'm like, oh, that'd be thankful. I'm like, you mind if I do an episode on it? Sure. I mean, that was like, I guess the main course that he sent me.
Yeah.
But you can like see the
Mosasaur tooth. Yeah.
And you can kind of, I have speculated that these are like some kind of, what would be the correct term? Like barnacle, some kind of fossilized barnacle, maybe. It's kind of hard to see. But
that's entirely like, possible.
So I actually have a mosasaur tooth that is like that. So it's been excavated, prepared, blah, 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 to sell. And it's just like one of those things that have been.
Now, is that from Morocco or Kansas or someplace else in between?
This one, I actually got it just at like a store in, I want to say like Kentucky.
Okay.
So it probably was like shipped from like Morocco or something.
Okay.
But
the other one there with the barnacles on it, is that one more locally sourced?
I actually have the little card. Did he put it on there? No, darn. I'll have to ask him where he got it from. I actually don't know.
That's all right. The reason I'm asking is that so at the museum where I used to work, Orlando Science Center, we have the skull of a cephactinus. That's the big bulldog fish. And the skull is still in its jacket and in its matrix, because in the area around the fish's eye, you can see all these oysters and things that had started to like develop a little community inside of this dead fish. And we found even a couple of shark teeth, like those squalicorax teeth, that had not been identified before. So we found a new species of shark identified in this fish skull that also had a whole set of microorganisms and little bivalves growing out of it too. So yeah, there's a very good chance that right there you're seeing an example of why we don't blow the dinosaur bones out of the walls with dynamite anymore. Because you find a cool piece of something, and it's got a story to tell around the outside of it.
And it might be really hard to see because it blends in, but there's like a piece of shell right here.
I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe yeah, absolutely.
Maybe I do need to switch cameras. Mini magnifying glasses. Well, actually, I'll just use this one. This massive magnifying glass thing that I have.
There you go. Oh, that's cool.
It helps it a lot better.
Yeah, that works really well. That's nice.
Right there.
Yeah.
You can kind of see it. And it seems to be some kind of... I don't really know what that is. It looks like more like iron or dirt or something. That weird square.
It's all parts of the Matrix. It's all the non-living rock. But around used to be living rock.
I was expecting something like this. He was just going to send me like a mosasaur tooth or something like that. I wasn't expecting him to be like, here's a chunk of earth where we with the mosasaur tooth still in it. And I was like, wow.
So, Eric, question for you then. Would you consider learning how to prepare on that?
What do you mean? Like how to take it out?
How to prepare fossils. Yeah. How to take a pick and a brush and like a toothbrush with a little bit of water and just like very gently removing some of the stuff from the outside that's not the mosasaur and not the shells.
I mean, I would be up for trying it. Yeah, that's about it.
Maybe next time you're out digging around, if you find some of the cool things, like you find some more shark's teeth that are like anything else intact or anything else that has a piece around it, might be a good idea to start looking at.
Yeah,
getting a sense of you can get dental picks now at hardware stores, and so like even places like Harbor Freight, yeah. You can get a little bag of like they call them hobby picks, but they're basically the same thing. And so you use a couple of those, you have your magnifying setup, and you just take an old toothbrush and some water, and you just soak it over the night and things like that. It's if you want to though, right? Otherwise, you've got a really cool piece for a collection that can tell its own story.
So
that's another question. We prep with a purpose. If you want to display it and you want to prep it up nicely, then you can use different kind of chemicals. If you're prepping to get the genetic information out of it, then we don't use any chemicals whatsoever. And if you're prepping it for future study, we do a minimal prep just to kind of hold it in place so that other people can make sure they're looking at the right pieces.
Because this definitely seems like a tooth that the mosasaur had shed.
It does a bit.
So... for like a personal thing, I mean, having all this like loose shell and thing all around it is just like cool to me,
mm-hmm.
which is the only reason whoa, what is that? Oh, more shell. You find something new. It's like, oh, more shell. But it's like, I kind of want to leave it in. I kind of want to take it out. So I've just got this split decision and I guess I'll just leave it in for right now.
That sounds like a good plan.
And that's a mold. So there's no prepping that.
Is it a mold or is it a cast?
I think it's a cast.
So a mold. Yeah. So a cast is like a physical representation of the original thing. So if you.
I'm going to put this right here. It's a mold.
Okay. So here, for example, wow. This is my mold of a Stegosaurus foot. So I can pour stuff inside of this, shake it around, count to 20, and when I pour it out, I've got a life-sized, anatomically correct foot of a Stegosaurus. This is a cast. So this is a copy of a Tyrannosaurus Rex's jaw.
Has been already molded. It had a slip form, so like this is a replica. And you can see that they, you know, they fill that same material and pop this out, and now it's a Tyrannosaurus. So the cast is the end resulting piece. The mold is the piece that makes it the negative of the thing you're looking for.
So this is a cast. Casting. to answer the question, I mean, is a cast. I mean, I feel like most of the stuff I have is casts. No offense to molds. Those are still pretty cool because doing that is really cool. But looking at that end result, it's awesome. Cool.
If you take the tailfins and things like that, those are molds. They can be molds. You can have either or. If you take
start building a mold collection, you can start making your own cast with it. So there's a potential for that.
You can make your own casts, so you can add and remove things like that. So it's cool.
Kind of like what do you call it? Smelting, where you have like the mold of it, and you pour the molten whatever in to make.
Yeah, there you go.
Molten whatever, insert ore.
That's it.
But I mean, yeah, most of the stuff I have is casts.
So Eric, what's your next adventure going to be?
So. As of right now, what I know, my next adventure outside of like going to a museum.
Yeah.
Which would be April 27th at Rawling.
Right, because you're going to see the dueling dinosaurs.
That, if he's still on board, should be with Sergei, the Russian archaeologist. He's going to take me out on, well, no, I guess maybe March. Whichever one comes first. Yeah. So March, I'm either going back out to Folly Beach to search for more shark teeth and whatever else I can find.
Ah, fun.
But if whatever Sergei says comes first, he has invited me out to do, what would you call it? An underwater expedition for like fossil hunting.
Okay.
So either one of those two, whichever one comes
first. Safe travels on boat. That's going to be an awesome time. I can't wait to see what you find out there.
And
so for us, what we have going on coming up soon is, we're going to be part of Prehistoricon coming up in February. We're a nonprofit here in Orlando, so we're going to be part of the United Arts kickoff coming up this week. And then, Poe and Ajax, the Apatosaurus, and a few other animals are going to be heading out to a number of schools in the area. So we go and do events and we do presentations at schools and at libraries and things. And so we got a full semester coming up ahead of us here too. So hopefully, if you're in the Orlando area, come on and check out Dinosaur World. It'll be awesome. You'll see dwaba.org and all the information will be on Dinosaur Podcast. You'll see when our upcoming events are going to be.
And I mean, one of the first things that I got, but I mean, is there going to be like an actual, like, how do I word this? Like an actual, because I can't just go to any school. Safety. But I mean, obviously, you got like libraries.
Oh, no. So, yeah, the school events are because, you know, schools can actually get in contact with me and my team, and we can arrange dates so I can come out to classrooms and do special assemblies and things like that. But other things that I do at like libraries or community centers are generally open to the public. And so, you know, whenever I'm doing one of those or like at the here in the Conway Community Markets at Barber Park in Orlando, I'm out there all the time. And you come on up and say hello. I'd love to introduce you to Poe in person and meet some cool dinosaurs and handle some real fossils in ways that you don't often get to touch them in museums. So you can actually touch a real Triceratops bone. You can see real Tyrannosaurus information. It's really cool to see all this kind of stuff up close and personal and just activate those dreams and those memories.
I'll definitely look on your website and see when that is and see if I'm able to actually come out there. But like actually handling the fossil would be really cool because I have
it's very a cool few, time.
I don't want to say very few, but I have some real fossils that I get to handle, like this little trilobite that I have here.
Oh, fun.
It was shipped from Morocco.
It's a nice little phacops.
I mean, little trilobite. Everybody loves trilobites.
It's a phacops. Phacops. Those are fun little ones.
They are. I mean, I got some other things. I got some that aren't prehistoric.
Yeah. Like
right above here. Please don't fall. That is a knife. I don't want that to fall.
This, oh, you got an alligator.
I think it's alligator.
Yeah.
Yeah, alligator skull. Somebody asked me, how do I know this is real? Because I cleaned the flesh and brain out of it.
Oh, right.
So I cleaned it. So, I mean, I kind of knew it was real.
Did you use the Dermastid beetles, or did you use the acid wash, or what kind of things? I know of the process. I've not done this myself, but I know of the processes.
I used a glove, the dental like pick, and a toothbrush.
Oh, so you prepped out this alligator skull from a larger meteor alligator skull?
Yeah, there's an alligator in my grandmother's pond. You can kind of make out. Where was it? I want to say, yeah. Is that it? You can kind of see where it was shot.
Ah, okay. Yep.
And they were like, hey, we have an alligator skull, or we have an alligator head here. You want to clean it and have it? And I'm like, I'll go for it.
Gotcha.
So I just like scrubbed it. I had to take it out of a, here, let me see if I can, wrong way. There's a case right there.
Yeah.
I made that case too.
You got some other things there? Granddad. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's some other stuff in there, but I had to take it out of there because it, we lined it with something to make like the wood last. And whatever was doing it was damaging the bone. So I had to just take it out so it wouldn't.
Interesting. Okay.
Do whatever to it. But I mean, yeah.
Well,
got,
I think you did a good prep job on that for sure.
I have a
that'll,
random.
That'll be a good educational piece as well.
Yeah, very. I mean, alligators are cool.
Yes, they are.
I've also got like a random vertebrate that I just found outside one day. And I was like, huh, this is neat. And I just kept it. Let me see if I can find that.
Might be a way, a fun thing to try and identify then. You see some of the difference between
rather large.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean,
all right, what do you think it is?
So my friend thought it was a snake, but that is a huge snake. And I'm praying it's not a snake. I'm feeling this iron concretion startled me. I just like put my foot on him. I'm feeling like it's some kind of mammal.
Yes. What makes you think that?
Because of the
the neural arch there.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, so what you're looking at there is the neural arch. So that's where the spinal cord goes down through and connects out through there to help the animal move around. Now, which side is the front or side is the back?
I would go with this side's the front, this side's the back.
What makes you think that?
Because this looks like what hooks on to the other ones.
Okay, yeah. So you got the concave surface and then the convex surface here on the other side. I can't put my hand like that, but you know what I mean. So where the cartilage joins between, and so whenever an animal moves, it's got like this sort of pivoting joint here. So yeah, it should be able to move like that. So yes, this would be the back and that would be the front. Now, along with that, you got the neural arch going down. So you know which side is the top, right?
That side.
Right. So if it was a reptile, if it was a creature like your alligator there, that bone sticking up out of the top has places to attach muscle and ligaments. And alligators have all their scutes and osteoderms right down the back. And so there's not really a whole lot of room. Like that's too tall of an attachment point for the amount of stuff that an alligator would need to protect with it. You also can see where the ribs are going to go. Do you see where the ribs attach?
Right about there.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So now you've got a creature that looks like this, and the ribs are going to come out this way and come down and around. You got a big neural arch coming through and attachment points at the top. This was found locally in your area in South Carolina?
Yep.
Okay. What kind of vertebrate mammals do you have? Well, all mammals are vertebrate. What kind of mammals do you have running around out there?
We got deer, rabbits, coyotes.
Out of those three, deer, rabbit, coyotes, which could it possibly be?
I feel like this is too small to be a deer unless it's like a baby deer. It feels too large to be a rabbit. So it's either like a baby deer or a coyote.
Out of those two, what do you think? I think you got a good start. I think we've narrowed it down from the entire animal kingdom to one of those two things. Your next step is to look up deer and coyote vertebrae.
Yeah, let's see,
see what we look at. Actual science going on here.
That's the wrong deer. go to images. Yeah, no, it's a deer. I don't know if it's specifically a white-tailed deer. Let me take this one out. But not me, because this is specifically a white-tailed deer. So apparently, unless they just took the picture upside down.
It looks good to me, man. And so you can see, yeah. And then this picture right here showing the lumbar vertebrae, that's a research gate. Those are all published scientific articles. So you can actually see and compare the different structures of the one that you have to determine whether it's a sheep, a cow, a deer, whatever else it might be. But right now, what we're doing, you're comparing the structures of the thing that you have to what other people have documented and proven before. And this is how science works. This is how we're able to identify what animals we have here compared to what is new, compared to what is something already well known. So we have just used the scientific process to figure out what this particular unknown piece of animal material is. We've identified it as a white-tailed deer vertebrae.
But yeah, I was also going to say that since it was found in, there were some other like bones that got lost. I don't know where they went. Next to them, I was going to say that was probably hunted. So
entirely possible. Well, maybe not though, because if it was hunted, wouldn't it have all been together? If it was hunted by a human, they would have taken everything. It might have been taken down by one of those coyotes or other animals that you're talking about.
It could be.
Also, anyway, this was cool.
Here, I'm gonna show. I'm gonna just show the coyote one for the reference of.
Good idea. Science.
So I'm looking at this one mainly right here. If you can actually see my mouse, I'm saying that this isn't a coyote. Also, because this one has like a more, what would be, pentagon-like shape. While the deer was more rounded, like this one. So
okay, I get that. Yeah. Excellent reasoning. Good job.
So, yeah, it's a deer vertebrae. And I do have the lower bottom jaw of a deer.
So now you are on your way to building an entire reconstructed white-tailed deer in your, right there in your room.
Yeah, I have all two bones.
That's good enough. That's a good start.
It's a good, it's a good
more
start.
Than we had for... That's about as much as we have for Tyrannosaurus micrariae, micrariensis.
All I have for Tyrannosaurus is this.
Yeah, that's a good start too.
Also cast. I mean, and I'm surprised it took me this long to get a T-Rex tooth. It took me a lot less time to get Mosasaurus teeth before it took me to get T-Rex tooth, which I keep in this wooden case.
Listen, you're doing really well on your Allosaurus materials. Well, oh, that's a nice bit. Yeah, see, good case. Good job.
I've been building in what is it? Fossil crates. They have, I think he said something about there being an Allosaurus scaled skull coming out. So
okay.
I'm gonna get my hands on that.
That's gonna be good. That'll be perfect for your collection.
Yeah, I mean, but I guess I mean, do you have anything you want to show off? Anything else? I mean, of course, you have stuff you want to show off, but
yeah, no, we've been having a great, such a great logical stopping point, though. We just did some actual scientific discovery there, but yeah, sure, I'll show you some there. So I've got one piece that I take out with me a lot is my skull of Lori, the baby Triceratops, and I like bringing this one out because it lets people see just how, you know, the mighty skull of this huge animal. And then how they start off with such humble beginnings with a little nose and little horns. And the really interesting, like the teeth that are so well made for cutting through those tough plants like the cycads and things like that. They look kind of like Phillips head screwdriver bits. So if you're working on a Triceratops reconstruction, just get a bunch of those Phillips head screwdrivers and just like line them up. And then you're halfway through the teeth. But no, this is something that I 3D printed. And so I take this with me. Yeah, see, there you go.
It is a Triceratops tooth. It's kind of got that chunk here.
Yeah. Nope. You could build IKEA furniture with that. But no, it's these are some of the fun pieces I like to bring around with me because people who don't get a chance to see a full-fledged museum, like if you don't get a chance to get up to the Museum of Natural History or the Smithsonian or things like that, you know, this moment, this passion can be lost to you if it's not properly nurtured. But all people of all ages, no matter how much money your family makes or where you live or anything like that, everyone has the ability to experience these animals. And
so my ultimate dream is to have like my own museum for my collection, for dinosaur stuff that I find, that I dig up, that I buy, whatever, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I've been just having this like debate in my head. Where should I put it? And putting it out west would be cool. It would be cool. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
It'd be easy to ship things there. It would be cool. But we don't have a lot of that here. we don't get those big Allosaurus hand claws.
Right.
Like this. We don't get Coelodonta. Well, actually, that's not even in America at all. That's Eurasia. But semantics. We don't get Apatosaurus and things like that over on this side of the country.
We just got our first Acrocanthosaurus not too long ago.
So. Yeah, but I mean.
But yeah, I know what you mean. So that's the beautiful idea. Why don't you make something for your local community?
Like bringing it here, like having that dinosaur museum here, probably good for business. Keep you open a little bit longer. But I mean, but B, it, instead of traveling how many ever thousands of miles out west that you maybe can't afford, I get that happens for some people. It also, like, a whole trip for that is kind of a lot.
Yeah.
Maybe it overwhelms some people. And actually, it's actually a good thing that I brought
up. The ability to get out that far is often limiting for most people. Most people aren't going to, 35% of Americans aren't going to actually move or live any further than 50 miles from where they were born. And so if you, it's a huge number of people who just are not able to get far from the places where they live right now. So if you have the ability to make something, it's going to help connect them to the larger part of the world. It's important for you to do it now and then, right there where you are.
And actually, it's a good thing that I brought that up. If you do want to go out on a dinosaur dig, or not, well, yeah, they do dinosaur digs too, or you want to just go out west and see museums, I personally pulled the Utah and Colorado one up. What did they
call it?
Red Rocks and Raptors.
Yeah.
Go to dinosaur trips. I mean, if you want to do that and you want to go see some museums and stuff out west and go see all that, then go do it. I pulled this one up because it's being, what would you say, led? Yeah, it's being led by Dr. Brian Curtis.
Yeah.
Fossil traits. So that's why I brought it. That's why I pulled it up. I sadly can't make it this year. Maybe next year. We'll see. But yeah, if you'll want to do that and you'll want to go out and do that, I mean, go do that. Tell them that Prehistoric Life sent you and they'll give you $250 off. I mean, just saying, it's a good deal. And of course, you can just find them at Fossil Trips on Instagram while you're searching up that guy and me. I mean, if y'all want to do that, not making y'all do anything. But I mean, so like I was saying, I mean, it's cool to be able to go out and see those. Those are really cool. I mean, like, Dinosaur National Park, beautiful place, like the wall with all the, like, Stegosaurus, Camarasaurus, Allosaurus, and just mixed into it is really awesome.
Yes.
But that's also something like, out of everybody I know in South Carolina, it's probably like me and one other person who has seen that.
Yeah.
But to bring something like that here to South Carolina and be like,
it would be something really special.
Would be like, here is, where do I put it? The juvenile Allosaurus hand claw cast from Dinosaur National Park. I mean, and to show them that those things are out there, that those things exist, and to like be like, hey, if you want to continue learning about this and you get that opportunity, you can go here. Like, because some museums, I will probably bash a few heads on this one, but one thing I don't like about some museums is that they forget to put where it came from. So you have Allosaurus or something and they're like, it's Allosaurus, and you're like, oh yeah, that's so cool, where did this come from? I don't know, you didn't tell me.
Okay.
But it's like, so like, if like for a while, like I was studying Allosaurus and I was like, all I know is like these couple of states.
Yeah.
But I was like, as you go into it, you can find like the Morrison Formation, but then it's also like, what part of the Morrison Formation? In which areas are there high concentrations of Allosaurus to where you can find this?
Sometimes it can be difficult to get very specific latitude and longitude on these things, because that can sometimes inspire people with the wrong mindset to get out there and start digging up and see what else they can find. So,
and I mean, that is the other part.
Eric, I've appreciated the fact that we've had all this time together, and it's been an absolute wonder. Thank you so much for having me here today. And I've really enjoyed having a chance to talk with you about everything. I'm glad that we had a chance to explore what your favorite animals were. The work that you're doing here is so cool. And I'm glad we got to identify what that vertebrae is and to put all these things together. So I should say, thank you so much again for having me on here today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for coming on, man. I mean, it's always an honor to have someone who not only just indulges in the same, like, what do you call it, like hobbies as me, but just like another dinosaur nerd. For like,
yeah. Nerd. It's always we got to stick to our own. we take it, game recognizes game, you know?
I mean, yeah.
Absolutely.
So I guess you have any questions for me? I mean,
I appreciate you again for having me on here, and you know, people know they can find you at Prehistoric Life, and you can find all of my information and more things you have going on at dwaba.org, as well as on Instagram and on every social media at Dinosaur Podcast. But again, yeah, thank you so much for having me out here today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
For anybody who's wondering,
click on the homepage at the top, because this is what you click on the link in bio from the Instagram page.
Go and take one.
There we go.
There we go.
Yeah. So it tells you a little bit more about what organization does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see all the Brontosaurus. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff there you got to unpack. You can see some of the places they've been.
You've seen the previous episodes that I've been able to film, as well as my own podcast. And then also, you know, some of the cool things, there's places where you can see how to actually book appearances and have Poe and have Ajax come out and actually see everything that's going on. So
book it right there.
But please check it out.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I plan on it. So, I mean, and I definitely hope I can get down there and see you. So.
Ah, it'd be great to have you down here, Rick.
It would be an honor to come down there and see all that stuff. But let me pull this up real quick. And for anybody who maybe just wants to check him out on Instagram, there it is. You can check it out there. So while you're checking that out, you know what? Go ahead, check out the Prehistoric Life Podcast Instagram page. I post additional content on there. Reels, dinosaurs of the week, things about interviews, et cetera, posts. Like the last one that you see there is good the stuff. Dinosaur trips. By the time this episode will come out, there will be a couple more things. So this is really a blast from the past. But I mean, if you guys want to see that, it's Prehistoric Life on Instagram. And sometimes I get a little hasty posting things. So if you want to see them, if you want to see them a little bit, see these episodes a little bit early, check out the YouTube page. I mean, I try to post things 2-ish days in advance on that.
I knew that you spoke with Skye. Skye's always a fun conversation to have for sure.
I got to get her back on.
She's great.
She got to talk about the Mother's Day site.
Yeah. So, no, she's wonderful.
If she's listening, I'm coming for you. And
all right, Eric. Well, hey, thank you again, man. We'll see you soon.
Thank you so much. I mean, so I hate those pop-ups. So I'll see you next time. I mean, but I didn't mean to click that. So, I mean, and for all of you checking on this, I mean, I forgot to say something else about what I got. If you want one location for everything, go to the website. You can see the YouTube, the Instagram. If you scroll all the way to the bottom, you can see the Instagram. You see all the episodes that I scrolled way too quick. You see the Instagram at the bottom, but that's just a general location for all the stuff. But I'm your host, Eric Crawford, and I didn't mean to click that either. Oh, I'm clicking everything. I'm your host, Eric Crawford. Wrong way. That's Jimmy from Dinosaur Podcast. I'll see you all next time. All. Remember?
Even the season pros, all of us.
Remember.
So long, everybody.
Goodbye. Great episode, man.
All right, very cool.
So,
awesome.
I mean, you got anything else you want to talk about? I mean,
no, we're all good. That was a good episode.
All right.
Very cool.
I guess I'll see you.
Thanks again for having me. All right, I'll see you soon.
Thank you for coming on, man.
My pleasure. Absolutely.
It's always an honor. I mean, it, like, you have no idea how much this, like, always makes my day, just having someone to talk to about this.
Oh, absolutely, man. I appreciate it. And this was a good conversation for sure. And I like that you're building something here very strong. You're connecting with some good people, and some very enthusiastic people. And you're going to do something really cool with this. So I can't wait to see what comes next.
I mean,
thanks for letting me be a part of it.
And you are. And I'm sure you're a busy man. So I'll let you go, man.
I appreciate you. Thank you, Eric. See you soon.
See you. And there's one other thing I forgot to leave on that I left out. Since this episode should be coming out in January still. That's the wrong thing. Since this episode is coming out in January, if you go to the if you go to the Fossil Crates website and use code Prehistoric Life for any, what do you call this, crate or whatever else, Dr. Brian Curtis himself will toss in a Velociraptor Kill Claw. You will toss in a Velociraptor Kill Claw. All you have to do is use code Prehistoric Life. Well, it's been real, guys. I'm glad y'all guys stayed this long. So, see ya.